Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, August 3rd, 2023. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Melody. It is the dog days of August, and you know what that means. It's Happy National Watermelon Day. And since water is 92% water, it's very satisfying in these dog days. You know, it originated in southern Africa many moons ago. And while it's considered a type of melon, it really isn't. It's not in the genus Cucumis family, if that's how you pronounce it. Anyway, we know that watermelons produce that juicy, sweet taste, ranging from deep red to pink, although sometimes it comes in orange, yellow, or even white. We prefer the seedless ones in our family. With the right growing conditions, they grow to enormous sizes. Guinness Book of World Records says the heaviest watermelon has weighed 262 pounds. Mm. That's a serious melon. Don't know how it tastes. But hey, to learn more about refreshing watermelon facts, check out www.watermelon.org. Yes, Melody, the fruit has its own website.
I was just thinking, this is like, it's got its own website? Are you kidding me? Well, I'll tell you what, you might like the seedless, but you know what? When we were kids, the thing I remember the most about watermelons being a child was spitting seeds at your siblings.
I know. There you go.
You know, there see you how go. Far those seeds could go.
Yep. Yep. But now we've grown up. And we got to clean up those seeds after they're spit out.
So. This is true. We've grown up and we don't want to clean them up.
I know.
Of course, we were outside at that point in time. When we were kids, we played outside, not like the children today where they're inside most of the time. But we were outside and nobody really had to clean them up. You know, there weren't that many. And anyway, great memories of those watermelon seed battles.
Yeah. 30 some years ago.
Exactly. Well, let's take a peek at the precious metals today. You have gold holding its own, 1934. Not a lot of change in silver either, 2366. Platinum was down 8 at 921. Palladium was up 8 at 1,286. And the USDX today was down 0.10 at 102.54. Crude oil is holding that 80 level, 2.25 to the upside, 81.74. And the paper markets today, I think there's a little bit of pressure on them. Not much, not like yesterday. You have the Dow down 66 points, the S&P down 11, and the NASDAQ down 13. And Europe, I think, was probably all negative 2. They were a little bit more pressure on those, but I don't think any of them was down 1% or more. Asia markets, now they were, let's see, Shanghai was positive, but the Nikkei was down 548 points. So that had a little more pressure on it. 10-year yield, 4.18. Wow. Mm-hmm. 4.18. Wow.
They don't like Fitch.
I guess not. Well, we talked a little bit about that yesterday, and I'll give you my viewpoint when we get to that, because I know you want to talk about that too today. Natural gas, 2.56. That was up a little over 3.33%. And that's it for the market report today. And let's go ahead and see. What? Mega Millions jackpot hits $1.25 billion. Somebody won that.
Must have been another one.
Okay. The next Mega Millions drawing is tomorrow at 11 p.m. Eastern. And right now, it's grown to an estimated $1.25 billion. This is the fourth largest. It just goes to show you how worthless our money is.
Yeah, I know. Jeez.
I mean,
you can even be able to compete with some central banks' purchases of gold with that kind of number.
Wow, I wonder what the odds are. Usually they'll post the odds. They're kind of funny, but anyway.
Like one in like 277 million?
Yeah.
Probably more.
Yeah? Oh, I would think it would be more, I would think. I don't know. If you took a lump sum, it would be 625 million. Or I don't know who in the world would take a 30-year annuity. What are you nuts? But you would get the $1.25 billion after taxes. I don't know, but anyway, let's get back to the news of the day. You know, we talked about this yesterday. I know you want to talk about it. Fitch has downgraded the bonds, U.S. government bonds. It went to a AA+ rating. It doesn't have the AAA as it had. Some analysts are calling this a strange decision, not because the U.S. fiscal outlook is pretty, because it certainly isn't, but because of Fitch's stated reasons. Federal government does face tough fiscal trade-offs in coming years, with interest payments on the country's national debt poised to eat up a growing share of the economy. There are concerns of growing deficits, crowding out private investment, and Social Security facing steep automatic cuts in 2033 if Congress doesn't do anything. Well, it's like, hey, they're not going to do anything because it would ruin their chances of re-election. So they're not going to do anything. But there's some out there that say that the downgrades say the issue isn't so much of one of creditworthiness as implied by the Fitch downgrade, and when it's when and on what terms those adjustments happen. And Fitch analysts cited the expected fiscal deterioration over the next 3 years. Next 3 years. Did you hear that, ladies and gentlemen? Fiscal deterioration over the next 3 years, a high and growing general government debt burden, and the erosion of governance compared to peers over the last two decades that has manifested in repeated debt limit standoffs. And, of course, all of these last-minute resolutions, Dave.
Yeah, it's been a head scratcher. I mean, yesterday the markets took more of a hit from this, although they were down.
It was barely, yeah.
Yeah, down a little bit more this morning, but as we see how it ended up, barely noticeable. Some stations are kind of mocking the rating sarcastically, its importance anyway, noting that virtually no major newspaper in the U.S. Had any front page headlines about this today. Mm-hmm. And there are those like Wall Street's favorite, Jamie Dimon, who heads J.P. Morgan Chase, and also guys like Larry Summers, former Treasury Secretary, who think the downgrading is a big joke, just being very critical, saying, you know, claiming that because the U.S.'s bonds, government bonds, are the most trustworthy in the world, you know, there's no way they shouldn't be AAA. Well, whatever the case is, Fitch disagreed, and they jumped to the chase ahead of, you know, a government shutdown fight in just a couple of months toward the end of September. They've sort of been, whereas Moody's Investor Service and S&P's ratings, municipal government, local and state governments have been more nuanced over the years. Fitch sort of went to a strategy 15 or so years ago, when I was doing more of that kind of business, Melody, and Fitch said, you know, unless there's a local government that's really on the verge of bankruptcy, everyone's going to pay them. And so their philosophy was, you know, virtually every municipality in the state should be a AAA. The other rating agencies see it differently. And based on what happened in the Great Recession, I'm not sure any of it matters too much, particularly in terms of judging a company or a local, state, or federal government's creditworthiness. They happened to miss the boat big time back then. So, you know, I don't know what all this means. Someone said, you know, maybe it just perhaps means a little deference to the powers that be, given these financial turbulent times. I have a feeling, you know, unless, you know, again, even if there's a government shutdown, I don't like them myself, some may think, well, it's a great way to cut the government spending. Well, it sort of never turns out that way, because all the agencies end up getting at least last year's appropriations levels, and all the employees are paid you know, back pay and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, enough of that, Melody.
Well, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, and, you know, and I don't like quoting Jamie Dimon. You know, they're all felons. You know, they pay a little fine and they escape any type of jail time. But, you know, he said it doesn't really. And you know what, Dave, when you said it too, what's it, you know, they didn't call it back in 2008. You know, it took how many years after the recession began for them to do anything about it? Nobody pays any attention to it. Again, it wasn't reported. And so there, again, this is, you know, it's how the media and also covers up things that should be a very important topic. Yeah. And people should know about it and understand. But you know what? No one's going to be held accountable for it. Like Jamie Dimon is never held accountable for the company that he manages and so forth and down the line. So what does it really matter?
Yeah. I mean, normally what happens in a downgrade, the issuer of debt pays higher interest rates. In the case of the federal government, there's tends to be a much larger impact. I mean, even if we're talking 10, 20, 30 basis points, you know, that kind of increase on 32 plus trillion in debt, that's a huge impact. You know, when it comes down.
And we'll see where these rates go.
Right.
You know, they could just climb up gradually and, you know, and nobody's going to be paying much attention to them for a while or whatever. But I think the whole point, too, is everybody overlooked what the analysts cited, the expected fiscal deterioration over the next 3 years. I mean, that's a powerful statement.
Yeah, they see a lot of continuing infighting among Congress, within Congress and between Congress and the White House, presumably, whoever's going to be in power after next year's elections. I would tend to agree with that 100%.
Yeah, but I mean, it goes to show you where this economy is headed. And you're showing a growing general government debt burden. Yeah, that's higher interest rates, but it also would mean higher inflation, more debt. So everything that we talk about here and why you need gold and silver is right there. And they're confirming it. Things aren't going to be rosy. But you would think if they thought it was going to be that bad, but they couldn't have dropped it, or they couldn't have changed it any more significant, because if they would have did it to, you know, instead of, you know, maybe just not a double A plus, but I don't know, double A minus.
Right.
That would have had impact. So what they did was just enough to, I don't know why they did it.
I guess they must have thought there'd be a wake-up call.
Yeah. They're going to have a bigger drop in order to have a wake-up call.
Yes.
But mortgage rates, we're talking about interest rates rising. They rose again this week. And the average rate on the 30-year home mortgage rate ticked up to 6.9%. A week ago, it was 6.8%. And even a year ago, it's amazing how you think, we've been talking about this for, seems like forever, but a year ago, the benchmark home loan rate stood 38% lower than what it is today, just hovering at 5%, 4.99. The average rate on a 15-year fixed rate mortgage, that climbed to 6.25%. From 6.11 last week. A year ago, it was 4.26. So, you know, these higher rates, they add hundreds of dollars a month in costs for borrowers. And, of course, it limits, we've talked about this earlier in this week, Dave, how it limits how much money they can afford when purchasing a home.
Yeah. Yeah, and as we've been talking, I mean, the average cost of a home right now, over $400,000. In fact, it's over, what is it, 416 roughly, ranging from, you know, an average low of 114 in West Virginia and 132 in Arkansas to 693,000 in our nation's capital, followed by 689 in Hawaii. Now, again, mortgages don't necessarily mirror the Fed's 11 interest rate increases since last year, but they tend to track the yield on the 10-year treasury. But investors' expectations for future inflation, global demand for treasuries, and what the Fed does with interest rates can influence rates on home loans. They do. Of course, the average rate in the 30-year is more than double now what it was 2 years ago, when ultra-low rates led to a wave of home sales and refinancing of existing homes. The far higher rates now are contributing to a lack of inventory. Homeowners who locked in those lower borrowing costs just 2 years ago are reluctant to sell and jump into a higher rate on a newer property. So the more things change, the more they remain the same.
Well, today is Jobless Claims Thursday. And applications for jobless aid rose by 6,000 to 227. And this is all the week ending for July 29th. And jobless benefit applications are seen as a proxy for the number of layoffs in any given week. And I hear the music, so that means we can't go any further. We'll be right back. Please stay with us.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you, never gonna give you up.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. We got some back. I call them backdated silver eagles, or you know, some of your websites will call them random dated, you know, and so forth. But I do have some people are having hard times, so they're having to sell some of their silver to get cash. And that's one thing that's great about gold and silver is because it's always there for you, and it's a savings account. So if you need something, you sell it and you have it. So, but we can also give it to you for a good price also. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I'm just going to touch on some of these pieces we didn't get to prior to the program. We know we see oil and gas prices are moving higher again. Dave, they're talking about possible $100 oil again. You know, it's interesting, too. I saw where the government was going to begin refilling the reserves. Now they put a hold on that. Prices are going higher. So keep your tanks filled, ladies and gentlemen. Start saving. Gasoline again was over $80, so you're gonna. And I think gas prices now are close to $4, closer to $4 than they are to $3. So it's a quiet little gain that we haven't been seeing, that we've been seeing. Bank of England raises rates again, Dave. Oh, and I didn't know if you wanted to say anything about the oil, gasoline prices.
Well, I'm finding it interesting about, you know, the Saudis saying today it'll extend its production cut of 1 million barrels a day through the end of September. Given what's going on behind the scenes with the U.S. and Israel and Saudi's supposed interest in a deal, this could have some impact on that, although I think we'll wait and see until after September, after see what happens, what they do, what OPEC Plus does. Voluntary period comes to an end. We know that the Saudis are particularly interested in having higher prices. Because higher prices mean higher profits for the producers. Wants to fund its Vision 2030, which is a really ambitious plan to overhaul the kingdom's economy, making them less reliant on oil for their wealth and create more jobs for its growing youthful population. The plans include several massive infrastructure projects, one of which we've mentioned before in this program, called NEOM. It's the construction of a futuristic $500 billion city. Must be a small city. That seems pretty cheap, particularly if it's going to be anything like Abu Dhabi, for example. We will see how things unfold. But thanks. Yeah. That's all I have to say about that.
All right. I think we should go into your levity is golden. It's about living longer. There's a new book called Outlive, The Science and Art of Longevity is the topic, Dave. So
yeah,
tell us more.
Well, I haven't read this myself yet. A book written by Peter Attia, who's an MD, is getting tons of buzz and has spent over 4 months on the New York Times bestseller list, actually number two for its hardcover nonfiction genre. Here are some of the things that the critics, we'll call them, have been saying about the book. First, health span, longevity, has two components, how long you live, but equally important, how well you live. And that, Attia is calling health span, the period of life when we are free from disability or disease. Next, why cutting total caloric intake makes us healthier. He says, reducing the amount of nutrients available to a cell seems to trigger a group of innate pathways that enhance a cell's stress resistance and metabolic efficiency. Sounds somewhat technical. I think I understand it. Now, this next one, it's a new word, autophagy. Autophagy, A-U-T-O-P-H-A-G-Y. Which cleanses our cells, allowing them to run more efficiently. As we age, autophagy declines. So he says we should eat less, period. Then there's an explanation for the diabetes epidemic. Our metabolism, as it evolved over time, is not equipped to cope with our ultra-modern diet, which has appeared only in the last century or so. In other words, evolution is no longer our friend. It's a good warning. Then to try to thwart Alzheimer's disease, Dr. Attia says to try varied challenges requiring more nimble thinking and processing. Simply doing a crossword puzzle every day seems only to make people better at doing crossword puzzles. I don't know if the same holds true for Wordle, too. And exercise. The book calls it the most powerful longevity drug. Exercise, exercise, exercise.
I'm doomed.
I know. Then there's the centenarian decathlon. Dr. Addy says to make a list of the 10 most important physical tasks you will want to be able to do for the rest of your life, like hike 5 miles, get off the floor using only one arm for support. Yeah. Pick up a grandchild. There you go. Carry 2 10-pound grocery bags. Lift a 20-pound suitcase into the overhead compartment. Balance on one leg for 30 seconds. I can do 5. Drive a car into your 80s. And, yes, have quality sex. And finally, sleep. For folks who have access, spend time in a sauna or hot tub prior to bed. He says, once you get into the cool bed, your lowering body temperature will signal your brain that it's time to sleep. He says a simple hot bath or shower works just as well. And that's all I got for this week's Levity is Golden.
Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting, too. I'm going to go back to where it says about the diabetes and how our metabolisms haven't, you know, kept up with the changes. And I remember living in Arizona. That happened to the Indians, too, because they got a lot of their food from the government, and it wasn't the same type of food that their bodies were equipped to. Yeah. And so they've had, like, the Pima Indians, when I was there, had the highest diabetes rates in the country. Now, I'm sure that has changed. That would have been in the, you know, mid-'80s, early 90s. And so I'm sure, you know, with everybody now, with it seems everybody is diabetic anymore. But it does have an impact.
Recently saw a list of approved foods for WIC, Women, Infants, and Children, safety net program that helps lower income. Technically, they're for the children. And there was, interestingly, very little processed food. I was actually happy to see that, surprised. As I know in the past, some cereals had been on there, and even the most of the oatmeals out there, which they say are generally healthier, still contain a lot of added sugar.
And gluten.
Gluten for sure. I'm sure that I'd like to see statistics on how many more of us are, what would you call it, gluten resistant, gluten allergic, whatever. Anyway, I found that interesting.
And we didn't have that stuff, though. I mean, we ate oatmeal when we were kids, but it wasn't an everyday meal. And today it seems like, you know, that kids get oatmeal every single day, or, you know, it's so much of it. And, of course, we know the wheat, you know, that are breads and so forth, is totally different today than what it was 50 years ago. It's a different type of a wheat that's grown now. And you have all the GMOs and everything else that... You know, it's
got higher glycemic indexes for those of us with the type 2 diabetes and insulin resistance. Yeah, it's you got to pay a lot of attention. Oh, excuse me.
This is kind of interesting, especially for the we were talking about a young lady who thinks being late for work should be outlawed. She got very upset because no one would hire her because she wants to be late. She wants to come and go as she pleases. Well, now you have Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, who wants to remake the image of manufacturing. She wants younger people. I want more manufacturing. You know, but Raimondo has been instrumental in driving public and political support for the CHIPS Act, which is expected to create an explosion of new jobs in the semiconductor industry that will need to be filled. Well, that still remains to be seen whether there's going to be an explosion of new jobs, especially with technology and AI coming in. I don't quite think that there's going to be an explosion. Part of her job now would be to prime the labor market to meet that new demand. The U.S. semiconductor sector could already be facing a shortfall of hundreds of thousands of workers and engineers by 2030. So what they're trying to do is to get these Gen Zers that the jobs that your father or grandfather had, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, it is different. It is different. It is a different manufacturing operation. She says these robotic-enabled, tech-enabled, incredibly clean, super-fast-moving, fun operations where you can start your career without a college degree with a six-figure job and then continue to grow. How do you – I don't get – if these are robotic-enabled, tech-enabled?
Yeah, well, that's how I think the picture she's painting for the future of manufacturing. As you know, one of the tools for attracting younger people, who I guess she feels, you know, that will resonate with them. I mean, certainly six figure jobs is another eye opener. She says that there'd be 250,000 of those kinds of jobs created by the CHIPS Act. As Melody said, well, let's wait and see. We do know that semiconductor production in our country began to wane in the 1990s, and the number of manufacturing jobs overall fell by almost $6 million between 2000 and 2010. But manufacturing share of GDP has remained relatively stable because, well, other portions of GDP have grown. Now, Raimondo's apparently traveled to community colleges in certain parts of the country, Portland, Oregon, Austin, Texas, to tour the training facilities and also to talk to students there. So it's interesting. She's actually calling on being part of the semiconductor industry as being a way to serve your country. So I leave it to high-powered government officials to invoke the brand.
Well, I guess, but I'll tell you what, you know, let's see it first, and let's see where it's all headed, because manufacturing isn't coming back to this country in any meaningful way. You're going to see some pop up and so forth, but there's just no way. There's just no way. And because the cost will be just too high. Of course, government pays for it all, so hey. But anyway, let's go down. I think this is kind of important, and we're kind of running out of time. The U.S. hopes China will intervene in Ukraine grain crisis.
Yeah, this was interesting.
The U.S. is looking for China to help resolve the disastrous effect, Russia's exit from the UN-backed agriculture deal. Of course, we know China's Moscow's biggest strategic ally. We know that China is the world's second largest economy. We know that China was the indisputable top recipient of Ukrainian agricultural products under the landmark agreement known as the Black Sea Grain Initiative. Now, after nearly a year in place, we know that Russia stopped that deal. And citing frustrations that the deal only benefited Ukraine. So the agreement eased Russia's naval blockade in the Black Sea and established a maritime humanitarian corridor. That saw the passage of more than 1,000 ships carrying nearly 33 million metric tons of Ukrainian wheat, barley, corn, and sunflower meal. So since the inception of the July 2022 deal, which was brokered nearly 6 months into the Ukrainian war, Chinese ports have welcomed about 8 million metric tons of these agricultural products from Ukraine.
Wow. Wow. And last week I read an article as part of Russia's bombing efforts in Ukraine that they hammered one of the Black Sea grain ports that was used to load a lot of this grain onto the ships. Now we know that China is the biggest buyer of Ukrainian grain. So with the breakdown of the grain initiative, the pressures on China are going to be extreme in terms of food price inflation. That those are the words of David Rydell, who's founder of Rydell Research. He said they may have been stockpiling a little ahead of the breakdown, but that's a stockpile in weeks and not months or longer. Mm.
And there's the music. We'll be right back. Please stay with us. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of other client business this final segment. You know where to reach her, 1-800-375-4188. Hey, the U.S. and Europe have a lot of problems. $300 billion problem is one of them. What to do with Russian central bank assets that Western governments froze in February last year. Western leaders are under enormous pressure to redeploy these funds for the benefit of Ukraine, but concerns that such a move is legally questionable at best under both domestic and international law have prevented any action so far. At stake is Ukraine's ability to rebuild its shattered cities and resurrect an economy that Russia's army has literally destroyed. Excuse me. Meanwhile, the decisions Western leaders make will shape their credibility on the global stage as defenders of the rule of law and perhaps democracy, issues at the core of their support for Ukraine in the first place. Well, the moral case is clear. You know, Russia should pay to rebuild the country that it's been looting and wrecking on a colossal scale. That's not my words. That's Dilip Singh, who's chief global economist at PGIM Fixed Income. Singh served in the Biden administration until last year and is viewed as the architect of the West's sanctions on Russia. Well, so is the practical case, though. Deterrence for other state actors considering invading sovereign territory certainly is one. And the price tag for rebuilding Ukraine is steep. Right now, they're estimating $411 billion and growing by the day. Western taxpayers are unlikely to foot the bill, rightly so, but the geopolitical case remains fraught. Under international law, sovereign immunity protects state assets from seizure. Confiscating the assets unilaterally, a move unprecedented in scale, risks further inflaming, well, the global South's distrust and bolstering the view that the West is just weaponizing the financial system. Even as legal scholars and think tanks come around to the once unthinkable ideas that creative solutions should be sought to put the funds into the Ukrainian hands, Western governments seem stuck. Well, at least according to Charles Litchfield, who's deputy director at the Atlantic Council's Geoeconomic Center. In what, looked like a sign of progress just, well, in June, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen proclaimed that a fund for rebuilding Ukraine would eventually be financed with proceeds from the immobilized Russian assets. She pledged that the Euro leaders would release a proposal before their summer break. However, the session ended with no official proposal. It's a sign of just how difficult it is for 27 countries to agree to a controversial plan on the legal pitch, on the legal fringe, sorry. In the U.S., members of Congress have pitched their own bills that would grant the executive branch the power to confiscate Russian state assets that are held in the U.S. and transfer them to Ukraine. This flavor of legislation would address the domestic legal roadblocks, but not the international ones. Turns out that the U.S. holds just a fraction of the frozen reserves right now. The lion's share sits in Europe. Japan has some, too. If the U.S. Congress were to act, it could embolden some European countries who want similar legislation, but others will never want it. And to pass in the EU, unanimity is required. It's crucial that the U.S. and Europe work in concert, as they have with sanctions on Russia so far. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen told Congress in June that it's critical that any next steps we take be done via careful consultation with allies and partners in a coordinated approach. Added that we are engaging in those discussions and we're examining a number of options. Now, PGI's M. Singh proposes a modern version of Brady bonds, in which Ukraine borrows money using Russia's reserves as collateral. In theory, Ukraine might never need to touch the reserves, but he says such a plan would spur the much-needed private investment in its recovery. Now, if the West wants a legal path to actually confiscating the roughly $300 billion and transferring it to Ukraine, it will need to find a way to bypass legal constraints on seizing foreign state property. One way to do that, according to experts, is to link the seizure with an aggressor's obligation to pay reparations. Lee Buchheit and Paul Steven note in a recent post on the site Lawfare that International Law Commission unambiguously imposes an obligation to make full reparation for injuries caused by international wrongful acts. Unfortunately, it's not a quick fix. Pursuing reparations takes a really long time, they say, but there are precedents. In a recent paper, those guys that I just mentioned talked about precedents, including an international claims commission stemming from Iraq's 1990 invasion of Kuwait, and one used after the U.S. froze Iranian funds in the wake of their seizure of the U.S. embassy in Tehran in the late 70s. Simply put, a plan would look something like confiscating Russia's state assets segregating them in an account established by an international claims body, and telling Russia that funds will be applied toward the reparations unless Russia pays those reparations directly, voluntarily. Litchfield says, we haven't really answered the how are we going to do it question, but the vibes many are emitting have moved from that sounds impossible to we've got to find a way to do this. Interesting. Well, on the cultural end of life, as Hollywood writers and actors strike stretch on, state and local businesses are suffering billions of dollars worth of losses amid the halt in production. Film and TV production hubs like California, New York, and Georgia now face massive budget losses, even as they contend with the problems of high inflation and rising cost of living. California Governor Gavin Newsom last month signed a $311 billion state budget that covered a nearly $32 billion deficit while extending tax credits for film and TV productions. Those productions were already moving, slowing down before the strikes as media companies began spending more cautiously in an effort to produce more profits. If studios and streamers don't address workers' concerns regarding artificial intelligence and residual payments, Representative Jimmy Gomez of California said they're going to end up creating a race to the bottom where people can't afford to live. Film and industry pays over $186 billion in wages annually, according to the Motion Picture Association, which says as much as $250,000 can be injected into local economies per day when a film shoots on location. For example, in Georgia's fiscal 2022 year, film and TV productions there spent $4.4 billion in the state. The film and TV industry represents 6.5% of New York City's GDP and employs more than 185,000 New Yorkers. Well, the impact of the strike isn't just in the short term, according to Gomez, whose district across parts of East and Central LA has 33,000 SAG and AFTRA members, as well as writers and behind-the-scenes workers in the IATSE union. Gomez asks, what happens if these jobs become minimum wage jobs when they were good middle class jobs that people used to live off of? A contract where workers don't get paid to maintain a good living standard will be devastating for the economic health of individual families and communities, he added. Gomez also noted that California benefits from tax credits that make it an attractive place for productions to film their movies and TV shows. He asked, guess who does the lobbying for those tax credits? The union members. In Georgia, production has ground to a halt, says Kelsey Moore, who's executive director of the Georgia Screen Entertainment Coalition. It's impacted tens of thousands of local businesses there, including restaurants, hotels, and yes, dry cleaners. And in New York City, Peter Marshark, who's co-owner of the New York City-based Marshark Craft, which provides craft services for film and TV productions, said many of his company's employees are struggling and their trucks are sitting, gathering dust. Then you have Emmy-winning hairstylist Barry Lee Moe, who says the strikes have led to two projects he was working on shutting down. And while he considers himself fortunate, most artists can't be out of work for 1 month, let alone 3 to 6. In L.A., on location, film production declined in the second quarter this year, the sixth consecutive quarterly declined. Marshark noted that his business started feeling a slowdown in January, as nobody was taking on new projects except for the ones that were already written and scheduled. Well, the Writers Guild of America said it's meeting tomorrow with the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers, which represents the major studios and production companies for the first time since the writers' strike began in May. Gomez said contracts need to change to reflect the change in technologies that's being used to air film and TV shows. Well, let's see if and how this thing gets resolved. It will, for sure. Hopefully sooner than later, for the sake of all the little guys out there who are being hurt by these strikes. Hey, will wonders never cease? Listen to this. I don't know if you've seen this. The IRS is going paperless. Next year, taxpayers will have the option to submit all correspondence to the IRS electronically. Yes, the agency is aiming for paperless processing for all tax returns by the 2025 tax season, Treasury Department said today. That means being up and ready for full transition by early 2026, when those returns will be filed. The IRS says that its paperless processing initiative could eliminate up to 200 million pieces of paper each year, cutting processing times in half and speed up refunds by up to several weeks. Now, the IRS says it receives about 76 million paper tax returns and forms and 125 million pieces of correspondence, notice respondents, and non-tax forms each year. Its limited capacity to accept these forms digitally or digitize paper it receives has prevented it from delivering the world-class service that taxpayers deserve. Well, aside perhaps from the outright elimination of the IRS in our income tax system. The IRS also has more than 1 billion historical documents, which cost $40 million a year to store. Well, they say thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act, passed by Congress, signed into law by President Biden, taxpayers are now able to respond to more notices online. The IRS has made significant progress adopting new technology that automates the scanning of millions of paper returns. As the next phase of its modernization, the IRS is accelerating paperless processing efforts. The pandemic, along with staffing shortages and other related delays, created a massive backlog of unprocessed paper returns. Many refunds were taking up to a year or more to be sent. And I know that some returns, mine included, for 2019, I believe. Yes, 2019. Yeah, because when we filed on time in April of 2020, it took almost 2 years for our tax, that 2019 tax return, to be processed and brought up to date. Well, by the 2025 tax filing season, 150 of the most used non-tax forms will become available in digital, mobile-friendly formats. Today, there are much less than that available online. Achieving this milestone, the IRS says, will enable up to 60 million paper documents to be processed digitally every year. And I got to think, as long as they're not being processed by robots, that this could be a good thing. All around, all things considered. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Tuesday. Melody tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also, be on the lookout for our What a Russian Gold and Silver blog in the morning if you're a subscriber. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you, turning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.